tomorrow I'm scheduled to speak out at the lake. And what we're going to do tomorrow out at the lake is I'm going to share for a minute some things that I received from this conference. And then I'm going to have each one of you either share for 2 minutes. And I'm going to ring a bell and make you quit because I don't want to hear you all day long. I want to eat. So share for a couple of minutes something that you saw. And if you're uncomfortable sharing, or maybe you're wanted by the FBI and don't want to be on camera, then please tonight write down your thought for me. And you can either put your name on it or put anonymous. But I'd like a contribution from each one of you. So tomorrow I'll read it for you. If you're uncomfortable reading it, or you don't want to be on the camera or whatever, I want to take a few minutes and just give me like a little 2 minute spiel of something that you saw, something that you received, something that this meant to you. Because I'd like to hear that. And I know Mike would. And I've got a little mini message. And then we're going to do that. And then I'm going to ask Mike to come and close us out before we eat.
Something new.
Something new. Your history. Yeah, something new. Good, good, good. I'm glad you said that. We don't want your testimony. So, something new, something you're seeing right now. But bring that to me in a paper form tomorrow, little index card, or either if you're willing to say it, then we'll have you come up and say it. But I'm going to hold the microphone so I can take it away from you when you've talked too long. I have no trouble doing that. It's one thing I learned in ministry through the years, never give the microphone to anybody. Hold the microphone so when you're finished hearing them, you can say, thank you very much. I learned that at a little church.
Oh, when we were down there seeing you, it happened that one guy.
Mm-hmm. He went nuts. Yeah, he didn't know either. I really learned, I have failed to uphold that rule all the time, but I learned that lesson in 1982 at the Riverview Temple of Faith, the church I was attending for a while. And we had a evangelistic ministry. We would go out into the community and invite people to church. So I went up to the projects, which were close to where the church was, and I began knocking on doors and inviting people to church. Well, I knocked on the screen door on the project, and nobody came to the door, but I heard a voice say, come on in, sugar. And I thought, ooh. So I opened up the screen door, and I was 22 years old and hot to trot, and I mean, I was a looker back then. And I went inside, and there's this, I didn't weigh her or anything, but I'd say 425-pound brown lady sitting on the couch with a big gold tooth right in the front. She said, my name's Goldie. What's your name? And I said, hey, Goldie, I'm Robert, and I just wanted to invite you to church. She said, sit down. So I sat down, and me and Goldie got to talking about this and that, and she said, you going to come get me for church? I said, yes, ma'am, I'll pick you up if you'll come. So she decided she would come to church. So I picked up Goldie, and Goldie came to church. Goldie was a woman of the world. She said, I never have been to church. I said, you'll like it, Goldie. We have covered dish every Sunday. And I knew I could win her heart with fried chicken. That's probably why she decided to come. I found out later. But she started attending the church, and it was about the second Sunday that she came that the pastor got moved upon by the Holy Ghost to have a testimony service. That's where people tell all the stuff that God did for them that he wouldn't do for the neighbors because they prayed better than them. Or, you know, whatever. It just always just killed me, the testimony services where people talk about, God saved my house in the tornado, and the one next door, their house is gone. Well, what a shitty God. That is like, really, really? But anyway, we'd have testimony time. So everybody was giving testimony, and Goldie said, she leaned over to me, and she said, can I give my testimony? I said, yes, ma'am, you sure can. Well, Goldie goes up, and Reverend Cecil Tompkins handed her the microphone. And this is where I learned not to do this. So Goldie got that microphone, and suddenly she was called to preach. And she began pacing back and forth across that stage and giving her testimony. She said, I'm so glad. I am so glad to be in the presence of you all and God. I never thought I'd be up in church. I'm a bad woman. I've done all kinds of bad things. I have done drugs. I have done every kind of man you can think about. And so she starts going down her history of what all she had done. And Cecil turned just as red as a beet. He had snow white hair and a white beard. And he turned so red behind that way. And he was over to her trying to get the microphone. And she'd turn away from him. And she'd say, I have prostituted myself. And he's like, thank you, Goldie. Thank you, Goldie. She said, I've smoked crack every night. And she's going back and forth across the stage, and Cecil chasing her. Thank you, Goldie. Thank you, Goldie. He finally got the microphone and wrestled out of her hand and said, thank you, Goldie, for that testimony. Y'all say, praise the Lord. And we all said, praise the Lord. So I hold on to the microphone whenever I can because I know what might happen. Okay. Old Goldie. I'll never forget Old Goldie. I learned a lot of lessons from a lot of interesting people through the years. I was going to quote Paul the Apostle this morning, but I decided instead to quote Winnie the Pooh. Or John the Baptist. You know, John the Baptist and Winnie the Pooh have the same middle name. You know what Winnie the Pooh said? Winnie the Pooh said, the only real reason for honey is for me to eat it. Isn't that amazing and profound? The only real reason for honey is for me to eat it. If you'll start getting that attitude about the good things in life that you enjoy, it'll help you. Do you know that all the restrictions that you have in your life are self-imposed? Now, you might have decided to read a Bible verse and say, well, I'm not allowed to do that because Isaiah said it. Or because Paul the Apostle said it. I can't do that because Paul the Apostle said, I want to with all my heart do that, but I can't because Paul said not to. That's self-imposed. Paul never said any such thing. And if he did say it, it's none of your business. He wasn't talking to you in 2018. So here, and you're not a Jew. You're not under the laws that they all came up with and made up. And half of them are stupid anyway. So just forget all those self-imposed rules and enjoy yourself. You're supposed to enjoy your life. Do what you will and harm none. There's the rule. That's a Wiccan saying. The Wiccans have more sense than Christians in some matters. Do what you will. Do what you enjoy. And don't harm anybody. Real simple rules to live by. Even Winnie the Pooh had that much sense. What is honey for? It's for me to eat. That's why it's there. Yes, I can look at that. That's why it's there. That's, you know, okay. How about this one? If we are in each other's dreams, we can be together all the time. I feel y'all so much on my property. I have a chapel because of y'all. I have kids because of y'all. Y'all have inspired me and helped me and sent offerings and bought windows and paid for adoptions. And I look at my life and I think sometimes where I wouldn't have a life if I weren't connected in the body of humanity. If I was a loner, I'd have nothing. I'd have no one. My purpose wouldn't be fulfilled. I wouldn't find joy. My goal in life is to find joy. Whatever brings me joy, I'm all about it. I'm tired of stuff that doesn't bring me joy. So if it doesn't bring me joy, I'm pretty much leaving it alone now. That's why I quit listening to preachers. Preachers don't bring me joy as a rule. So none of y'all are preachers in this room, by the way. But I don't listen to preachers anymore because it doesn't bring me joy to listen to preachers. I don't go to church because it doesn't bring me joy to go to church. I've reached the age now to where I'm going to quit doing stuff I don't like. And maybe y'all should too. Some of y'all spend 3 hours sitting at a table listening to somebody yap and you don't like them and you don't like what they have to say and you don't like the dirty feeling you get listening to their garbage. Just quit. Tell them you can't meet them next week. Quit doing stuff you don't enjoy. I love this little saying. Winnie the Pooh said, people say nothing is impossible, but I do nothing every day. And nothing is impossible. You can do nothing. And y'all need to practice doing nothing. Some of you are so busy doing something, especially in your spiritual walk, practice doing nothing. There's nothing for you to do. I want to be more spiritual. What should I do? Nothing. Nothing. Every time you try to do something, you screw it up. Quit trying to do stuff. There's nothing else to do. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to see. There's nothing to receive. It's all already there. Access it maybe, but as far as doing some new thing, just forget it. I'm going to say it again. I love it. People say nothing is impossible, but I do nothing every day. Isn't that great? Here's one that I can't hardly read it without crying. How lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. Isn't that beautiful? How lucky. I told Robbie last night, I said, it's going to be so hard to leave again on Monday, but how lucky are we to have a family that we love so much in Michigan that it's hard to leave them? How lucky I am that I'm going to get to cry as I drive away. I always cry when I drive away from somewhere I love. My meemaw taught me that. We always had a crying session. She'd stand on the porch crying. We'd sit in the car crying, waving, and she'd motion for the window, and we'd roll the window down. See, we had crank windows. We'd roll the window down, and she'd say, this might be the last time y'all see me. She said that from the time she was 60 till she was 88. This might be the last time. So we'd all cry. But how lucky are we to have something we love so much it's hard to say goodbye. Isn't that beautiful? Thank you, Winnie the Pooh. You're way better than Paul the Apostle or John the Baptist. Even middle name's the same with Paul the Apostle too. How about this one? Rivers know this. There is no hurry. We shall get there someday. Even the rivers have that much sense. He has another one about rivers that I thought was amazing. Winnie the Pooh. This is all Winnie the Pooh. Can you believe it? Listen to this Winnie the Pooh quote. Sometimes if you stand on a bridge looking over the rail, watching the river slipping slowly away beneath you, you will suddenly know everything there is to be known. Sometimes if you stand on a bridge looking over the rail, watching the river slipping slowly away beneath you, you will suddenly know everything there is to be known. That's just profound. A day spent with you is my favorite day. Life is a journey to be experienced, not a problem to be solved. Here's one of my favorites. You are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think.
Yeah, I love that.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the value of doing nothing or just going along, listening to all of the things you can't hear and not bothering. Don't ever underestimate the power of that. Love has taken a few steps backwards, maybe even more, to give way to the happiness of the person you love. That's why Sarah sits and watches old Westerns, because she loves Dennis. She says she hates old Westerns, but she sits and watches them because she wants to be with Dennis, the man she loves. Isn't that precious?
Mm-hmm.
Some of y'all endure my music service because you know it means so much to me. Thank y'all for that. And here's the last one I'll quote from Winnie the Pooh. I was walking along looking for somebody, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. I was walking along looking for somebody, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. Isn't that so deep? So it could mean that because he found someone, and it could be because he realized he didn't need anyone else. There is no one else. Yeah, he's the only one. Isn't that great? I'll read it again. I was walking along looking for somebody, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. Oh, so no problem. For my message, we're on. For my message today, I titled today's message, let me see, where did I put my title? I've got my title on here somewhere. My Ship Don't Sink. It rhymes with the title of Mike's first message. The first message is my ship don't sink. Mine is my ship don't sink. I've cleaned it up a little bit. But it's my first message. The question that's going to open my message today, other than Winnie the Pooh quotes, is this. Can I be honest with y'all?
Yeah.
Can I be honest with you?
Yes.
Now, I wrote this question down, and I thought to myself, because this is how I wanted to start the message. And I thought, How odd a question to even ask a group of people that are meeting together. They're your family, they're your friends, it's your spiritual family guru institution. And why would you ever have to say, can I be honest with you?
Right. Yeah.
But I'm the kind of person that says that. I say it to Robbie Joe. Can I be honest with you? And if you break that sentence down, I broke it down. I was sitting in the bathtub this morning at 4 o'clock breaking this sentence down. Can I be honest with you? And for the sake of this conversation, pretend for a minute there is an I and a you. Can I be honest with you? We know there's no I and there's no you, but forget out just for a minute. Can I be honest with you? Let I and you exist just for a minute for the sake of this conversation. Because I do get it. I get the profundity and the depth of such knowledge. I get it. I do. But for me, I have to see certain things and I have to be certain ways in order for me to be the best rock I can be in a fireplace. I know I'm not an individual. I understand the beauty and the depth of the oneness and the message, but I also know I'm Robert Rutherford, and there's certain things about me. I'm not. I know I'm not Robert Rutherford. I know. Don't say, boy, he's dumb. He thinks he's himself. I'm not, and this is not me, and I know all that. I really, really know that, and I can preach that. I see that, but I still live at 250 Old Copeland Road, and there's still some things. I'm probably still in transition. Honestly, I'm being honest with y'all this morning. As far as the message goes, I'm probably somewhere in transition on a bridge getting over to the place where most of you already are. And I'm doing my very best not to offend anybody. It scares me every time I speak because I just know I'm going to say a bunch of stuff I would never in my life intentionally say anything contrary to what any other speaker is saying, even if I disagreed with them. If I go to the Baptist church, the preachers that do know me know that they can invite me to preach, and I won't preach something in the Baptist church that they disagree with. I can preach great Baptist sermons. I can preach great kingdom sermons. I know how to preach great charismatic sermons. I'm good. I'm a Catholic. I do last rites. People around the lake down there, they let me come and do last rites for their relatives who are dying when the real priest won't come see them because they're divorced or they're drunks or they're whatever, that I get to come because I know how to be all things to all people. I do. And I have enough courtesy and enough sense to never, ever intentionally sit in any group and say anything contrary to what the leadership of that group believes or is saying. I just won't do that because it's in me not to do that. My mama trained me that way. She taught us from early on to be actors. We have to act. You know, she'd come in there to announce to us kids. She'd say, "All right, Aunt Margaret and Clyde are coming. You kids better act like you got some sense." Well, that told me, A, we didn't have any sense. I mean, right away I learned out we were stupid, but also that you could act like you had sense, and that was just as good as having sense. And that's the way I was trained growing up. It's like, you know, you better be straight, but if you're not, you better by God act like you're straight. I mean, that's just part of growing up with my mama. It didn't matter what you really were, as long as you put up a good front and made everybody think you were something. Well, that's carried over in my whole life. And it's good that I can relate to all people and all things. I can sit with a group of bishops and talk about the original Hebrew meanings of the Pauline epistles. And I know what years they were written and what mindset he was in when he wrote them. And I can draw his map because I studied the maps in the Bible when preachers are preaching. I look at the maps or whatever I can do to not have to hear the preacher. I know Paul's journeys, his missionary journeys. I know when he took them and what year and where he went. I can have that conversation with a group of bishops that want to talk about the Pauline epistles. And I can sit with a group of drag queens and talk about the best duct tape that it takes to tape your Peter to your butt so nobody sees it in the front of your bathing suit. I know and understand how to relate to. And Paul said we must become all things to all people. And I agree with that portion of what Paul said. And I think it's a wonderful gift. But it also lends to pretense sometimes. When you're someone who is insecure, and I know y'all look at me and think I'm confident and bold and secure, and I'm the alpha guy that, you know, I'm the most insecure person in this room. I guarantee you that. Guarantee it. But you'll never know it because I know how to act like I'm not insecure. I know how to become the actor and act like I'm the secure, bold person that's confident and knows everything. And I'm being honest with you this morning. So I know how to do that. I can preach to you right now an amazing message and say everything right. I can say all the right phraseology, all the right sentences. I know how to read books and take the phrases that we, you know, would appreciate and add them all together and add my own flair to it and preach an amazing message. But that's not honest to me necessarily. And I want to be honest. I want to be able to just sit here buck naked, spiritually speaking. I want to be able to just sit here buck naked and still know that y'all love me. Because I know you're going to love me if I say all the right stuff. I know you're going to love me if I act right, Mama. I know I'll get a Tootsie Roll if I don't embarrass you in front of your friends by being too loud or too feminine or too whatever you don't want me to be. So I grew up trying to please not just people, but then they told me about this God, the All-Seeing Eye. That's to wake y'all up in case you was napping. The All-Seeing Eye, who was watching me all the time to see if I was doing the right thing. You talk about a case of nerves when a little kid thinks somebody's watching all the time. I thought Mama was bad. I thought she was an All-Seeing Eye because she knew stuff. My mama moved in divine revelation sometimes. She'd say, "Who broke that vase?" I had carefully glued that vase back together after I broke it and put it in a different spot on the whatnot shelf. How did she know I broke the vase? And she'd eyeball me, "Who broke my vase?" And it's like she was the All-Seeing Eye. But then they told me about a real All-Seeing Eye who knew everything about me. How do you fake it in front of somebody who sees that you're faking it? Yeah. I mean, if they know, if God's all-knowing, He knows if I'm pretending. I love you. He knows if I really love Him or if I'm just singing good. My head was in a spin throughout church history because I didn't know if I really believed or if I was just, I knew enough to pretend like I believed. I wasn't sure if I was playing the role. I pastored for 25 years. I was never called to pastor. I just know how to pretend I'm a pastor really good. So good that I was better than the real ones. I actually got great revelation. I had wonderful churches. I loved the people. They loved me. They grew. That, you know, it was like it worked. I was so convincing. It's like, I love Andy Griffith. That's a show that I really like. And
Andy Griffith.
Yeah, don't you just love, think about Barney Fife. What's his real name, the actor's name?
Don Knotts.
I don't even know his name because he's Barney Fife to me.
Yeah.
And he was on being interviewed one time, probably 10 years ago, talking about how that role on that show had defined him as an actor. And no matter what other role he tried to play, everybody saw him as Barney Fife. And he tried to play in some other movies a serious character, but he was just goofy Barney Fife. You know, no matter from that point forward, that's all he could ever be. And we assume these roles, and we put on our costumes, and we read the script, and we practice it, and then we interact with the other people on the stage, and we get to the point to where we become this character that we've made up in our mind that is not really even us, and we fool the other people, and then the real sad part is we get to the place to where we're fooling us. And we think we're Barney Fife instead of Don Knotts. And I became this person through the years that I made up in my head. And I read the scripts and I felt like I needed to be this or needed to be that. So I'd add that to my costume. Oh, I think I need a bracelet on. So I'd put that on. I need a different hairdo. So I'd stick it up and spray it. And I became this character on the stage that I could sit in the audience and watch and appreciate and not even recognize that it was me. Somewhere underneath all that. Does it make any sense?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness.
Amen. You're doing a really good job faking that you're not faking.
Thank you. So, I might be. How do I know? There's a danger. I didn't unplug anything, did I? I was sitting on a cord. Can you still hear me? There's a real danger for me. They told us fake it till you make it. I learned that in Bible school. You are a success, and you're supposed to look successful to the people, and you need to fake it till you make it. You know, go get you. If you can't afford a real suit, go get one at Goodwill, but try to get a good one. If your shoes have holes in them, don't bow down and let anybody see them. You know, get you some jewelry. If you can't afford real jewelry, get something that looks real. Get a Rolex with too many L's and don't let nobody look at it. You know, fake it till you make it. Get the car that looks the best, not the one that runs the best, because you want people to see you as a success. Fake it till you make it was an actual class. The title of a class one day that we had in Bible school.
What?
How to fake it till you make it. Because you're going to make it because Jesus wants you all rich and successful. But until then, fake it because you want to be a good example to people. I never wanted to disappoint people. And I never wanted to disappoint God. And to live your whole life, this is what religion does to you. Depending on how deep you dive into it. I dove in real deep, as you can tell. But you get to this place to where you don't want to be a disappointment. I would die before I disappointed Mike and sat up here and said a bunch of stupid stuff that he, you know, hated and didn't know how to tell me, and that would just kill me. Or before I hurt one of y'all or disappointed one of y'all or wasn't who you thought I was. Now imagine spending your whole life as a gay person in a straight world thinking God's going to fry you for that. That's where my pretense came from, I guess, is partly it's where I became such an amazing, awesome actor because it's act like you're this or die and burn eternally. But even when I was acting straight, hello, I had a wife and 10 kids, woo. Even then, I myself knew. And do you know what my greatest fear used to be? Dying and going to heaven where everybody would know the truth.
Oh, yeah. It's all like a movie.
Because when you got there, you had a movie of your life.
Yeah.
And they were going to show it. And I used to think, this is my thinking now. As an adult male, I would think, please let me die before my wife so she won't see the movie before they throw me in hell. I believe that at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I'm going to hell. I'm going to keep living like I'm not. And I'm going to go, but please let me go to hell before she finds out the truth or my parents. I used to wish I would die before my parents because I didn't want them to really know because Mama thought she got me over that phase of my life and Daddy never mentioned it. So I wanted to die before them and go ahead and get judged and thrown into hell before they got to heaven because I didn't want them to stand in the crowd and see my movie of my life, which shows every detail of everything you did and everything you thought. Can you imagine how many X's would be on the rating of that movie? I mean, maybe I'm the only pervert in the room, but somehow I don't think so. But all the things... Not just all the things you did, but all the things you ever thought about doing.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the screen. I mean, there you are in a sand. You're up there in a sandwich between Angelina Jolie and Jennifer Lopez, and your grandmama's watching it. And there's a movie of you thinking about, you know, making it with Jennifer Lopez and Angelina Jolie, and grandmama's watching over there with her prayer beads and her Bible going, cheetah, blah, 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 blah. And they show this before they throw you in hell.
Shania Twain,
sorry. Well, mine was Justin Bieber and Zac Efron, but I thought it would be too weird to say that. But just kidding, sort of. So small sidetrack. I used to be controlled by God and his representatives and his book. That was the director of the show called The Robert Show. It was God and his representatives, which would be the apostles, pastors, prophets, evangelists, and teachers, all the ones that pretended they were called and said God called them. I just assumed he did. So then I told people I was called, and they assumed God called me. It was great. It worked out great. I thought, oh. And now I find out they weren't called, and neither was I. I was just meeting a need. They said, who called you to pastor? I said, God. I mean, it sounded good. They all said, oh, God, the one who created the world, called you to pastor. I said, yes, God called me to pastor. Did you go to school for it? Didn't have to. God called me. He calls who he equips. He equips who he calls. Are you kidding me? So it worked. It worked fine. All the people I received as pastors, apostles, and prophets, and with no credentials, I became the person with no credentials. But I was under the producer of my show was God, his representatives, and his rule book. That was who was controlling my life. I was raised in my house with a centerpiece on the dining room table. We always had a centerpiece, and it was always fruit. And consequently, at my house now, if you sit down at the table, there's a bowl of fruit on the table. Sometimes it's real fruit. Sometimes it's wax fruit. We grew up with wax fruit on my dining room table. Anybody else grow up with fruit on the table?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about your cousins and your brother. I'm talking about real fruit. Ours was wax growing up. At my house, it's glass. We have a glass bowl, a woven glass, real pretty bowl with glass fruit in it that I found out cost like $200 that I got at Goodwill for like $12. But beautiful glass fruit. I also have a set of wooden fruit with all the carved bananas and grapes and apples and pears, all wooden, beautiful. I got that at a yard sale. It's sitting on top of my cabinet, and I'll switch them out sometimes. I have some velvet fruit that I got that can go in the bowl that's like smooth, feels like velvet, and it's got purple plums and yellow pears, and it feels fuzzy like a real peach. I got my velvet fruit. I'm lusting over a friend of mine has a chrome set of fruit with a chrome banana and a chrome apple and a chrome. I mean, it looks like chrome. It's bright silver, whatever. And it's too modern for my house, but I look at it and think, man, I want that bowl of fruit. But the centerpiece for my table has always been a bowl of fruit. And I don't know, my mama did it, so I do it, that kind of thing. Well, the centerpiece for my life became a God who watched everything, expected all this stuff, gave you the rules, and the punishment if you broke them. He let you know ahead of time. That's like my mama. She'd say, don't jump on the couch. If you jump on the couch, I'm going to cut your legs off. I mean, she'd let you know ahead of time what's going to happen. So no surprise, when she got out the sawzall, because she already said she was going to do it, God was the same way. Don't break these rules. If you do, I'm going to cook you forever. No matter how hard you scream for deliverance, you will not find any. Yet my mercy endures forever. How does that work? Your mercy is enduring forever while you're killing me and cooking me and torturing me. What about the mercy part? No, I'm cooking you forever. Mercy, that's for other people, not for you. So religion, the opiate for the masses, became my drug when I was a child, but really when I was 17 is when I got fully hooked, when I made my own decision and walked to my own altar at my own Pentecostal church and gave my life to my own personal Savior, my own personal Jesus. Did y'all ever think it strange that the main three religions we've got, we have Muslims, and we have Jews, and we have Christians, and you can trace all three of those back to one guy. Who is that guy?
Abraham.
And there's no wrong answer. You can go all the way back to Jesus or God or Adam or whoever, but they all go back to Abraham as the father of faith in the three major religions. They go back to Abraham. I was thinking about old Abraham, and I asked that question. I'm sorry, I usually don't ask questions because when you ask a question, you want some people to answer it, and if you're out there, you want to answer it because you want the teacher to be pleased that you knew the answer. We all have this thing in us. We're scared to answer it. We want to because if we get it right, man, I knew the answer to that. Did y'all see that? I knew that answer right there. Yeah, Abraham. Yeah, that's easy. But we're afraid. Why are we afraid to shout out the answer? What if it's wrong? What are people going to think? They're going to think we're ignorant. You got it right, Mike. Oh, Mike got it. Sally got it wrong. Dumb Sally over there. Man, she's stupid. And I heard a Jesus come from over here somewhere. I don't know. But see, we think that way because we put ourselves in that kind of position to be judged and to find that acceptance that we want so much. And with me in class, I lived in school to have the right answer. That was my whole goal in going to school. Let me get the right answer and let the teacher ask. And I mean, it was so plain. What do you get when you mix red and blue? I know it's purple. I've done it with paint. I've studied it. I've seen it. I know it's purple. And she says, what do you get when you mix blue and red? And I go, and some smart girl says, purple. And I knew it. I knew it was purple. And I couldn't say it because I was too scared of the rejection that would come if I was wrong. Because what if I tricked myself in my mind and I wasn't thinking clearly and the nervousness of the situation, and it was orange. What if it was orange and not purple? And I'd go through the scenarios in my mind and I became a nervous wreck. Because I wanted to get the answer right. I wanted to. And I've been that way about life, and I've been that way about God. I want to get this right, but I'm afraid to step out and say, this is what I think now, because it seems so wrong to some people, and then you get the rejection. Man, rejection sucks, and I've had it from so many people through the years, yet I've grown through all of it. But what were we talking about? Abraham. Abraham. He had a lot of kids. He had to be a cool guy because he had a lot of kids, as many as the stars of the sea, or stars of the sky and the sand of the sea. That's a big family. That's way bigger than me. I just had my 19th grandchild this 2 weeks ago. 19th grandchild, big old boy, Levi. Y'all know Levi, some of you. Levi's my hippie, and he named his son Roaming Earth. Rutherford, Roaming Earth. Not Roman, Roaming. He's roaming around. Roaming Earth Rutherford. That's his name. That's my grandson's name. It's Roaming Earth Brother. Isn't that cool? Very cool hippie name. And I don't think he should ever wear shoes or cut his hair. I think they should make a rule and he should just be a vagabond and just walk around places and be cool. And that's.
Isn't he as big as Adam?
He's big. He is. Him and Adam are almost the same size.
His name is two names?
Roaming Earth Rutherford.
It sounds like maybe he's
Earth is his middle name.
Earth is his middle name.
Okay.
So he's Roaming Earth. It's like an Indian name, kind of like Running Bear or Slobbering Wolf. Or he's Roaming Earth Rutherford. So that's my 19th grandchild. So I'm being fruitful and multiplying, the only commandment in the Bible I was really good at. I'm being fruitful and multiplying, have 19 grandkids. I'm a lot like Abraham. He was the father of faith because he believed something impossible could happen, and then it did. He got it up and impregnated his wife at 190 years old. And that was impossible. They had not baked bread in a long time. They had not had any party in at their house in a long, long time, so much so that they laughed when the angel came and told them. How many of you husbands have tried that trick, to go into your wife and say, an angel told me that we're supposed to make love tonight? If you just get ready, an angel told me. And she's thinking, well, I hope the angel brought some Viagra. But yeah. So Abraham believed God against all odds and produced a baby, two actually, one with his handmaid. Now, there's the kind of wife you want, gentlemen. When she's not in the mood, she says, just sleep with a maid. Just, and hopefully it's hopefully she's like Jennifer Lopez, you know, just sleep with a maid. And so Hagar is produced 13 years before Abraham, Ishmael, the child of Hagar, the maid, because Sarah wasn't in the mood that night and couldn't produce. And then comes Isaac. So the promised seed, finally, he has a baby. You know, he has a son through Hagar, and the angel shows up and says, no, that's not him. That's not the one I promised. Wrong uterus. So 13 years of trying later, I guess they tried all that time. Why would you just quit and try one time 13 years later or 12 years later? No, I guess they kept trying for 12 years. So they had a good stretch from the time Sarah was 90 until she was 100, I guess. So then they have Isaac, the beloved child, the promised one, through which will come the seed that will inherit the earth and from which will come the lineage that the Savior himself will be born of and from. And Isaac is growing up and he's a strapping young boy and he's strong. And one day Abraham goes in the house and says, honey, I'm going to take Isaac fishing. And she says, okay, try to be back before supper. And he says, all right. So he heads up the hill to kill him. Because an angel, God sent a message through an angel for him to just kill the kid now. So he takes him up the hill, and Isaac says, "Hey, Dad, where are we going?" He says, "We're going to make a sacrifice to God. You know, he loves that bloodletting. Our God, he's really bloodthirsty. He loves it when we kill any innocent animal and pour blood on rocks. He gets off on that." So Isaac says, "Cool. Can I cut the goat's throat today?" And Abraham says, "Not exactly. Look at that bird." That's what you say when you want to change the subject. "Look at that bird. Oh, it's a cool bird, Dad. But where's the animal that we're going to kill? Look at that bird over there." So they get up the hill, and Isaac, you know, gets off his donkey, and Abraham says, "Now, take off your clothes." "Why, Dad?" "You're the sacrifice." "I'm the what?" "You're the sacrifice." And he ties up his son and lays his naked, tied-up son on a pile of rocks. Now, I would call defects on this guy. If he told me, if any person tells me, I work with defects, I'm a mandated reporter, I have to report people that are child abusers, and if somebody tells me God told them to murder their son after they strip them naked and tie them up and lay them on a pile of rocks, that God told me that, I'm reporting them. In fact, I will intercede and steal the child. I'll kidnap the child and call the police and say, "I just stole a child. I'm bringing it straight to the police department because his dad was going to kill him." That's the ultimate child abuse. And this is the father of faith for the three major religions of the world said that God told him to murder his son. Of course, since God murders his, why not? So, while he has the knife in the air, ready to plunge into his son, laying on the pile of rocks, supposedly, an angel stops him and says, "Don't do that. I provided a ram over here in the weeds. Just kill the ram instead. Just wanted to see if you were willing." What kind of sick freak is that? That just wanted to see, just have to sit. God just needed to see if you were willing to do it. Well, if you're all damn knowing, then just see that I was willing to do it without making me go through it. Does that make any sense? People tell me God just wanted to see if he was willing. Is he stupid? I thought he was all knowing. So he knew Abraham was going to do what he was going to do before he actually did it. So what was the point in asking him to kill his son? He didn't. Abraham was just a lunatic and a child abuser. Okay. Religion being the centerpiece of your life screws with your head. And if I go home and take the bowl of fruit off the table and throw it in the trash can, believe me, I've got backup bowls of fruit. I just told you about them. I can try my best to get rid of my Methodist roots, but I've got some Pentecostal fruit. And I've got some charismatic fruit, and I have some kingdom fruit, and I had some manifested sons of God in Christ fruit, and I have some new age fruit. Is that fruit too? Mm-hmm. You can't believe all the fruit I have. All the different flavors and brands and colors and textures and feels. I don't have the chrome fruit yet. I'm headed towards chrome. That's my goal, is to have chrome fruit one day. But it's all fruit. It's all centerpieces. And if you choose to make religion or any god the centerpiece of your life, none of it's really edible either. I mean, you can put real fruit on the table. What does it do? Rots, goes bad, brings fruit flies. Back to my original question. Can I be honest with you? Break that down. Can I? What does the "can I" mean? Am I able? Can I? Because that's up to me. Can I? Am I willing? Am I ready to be honest with you? Will you hate me? Will you berate me? Will you reject me? What's it going to cost me? If I'm honest with you, if I lay this thing out honestly, what is it going to cost me? If you could take, I wish there was truth serum, like they have in cartoons and Batman movies, to where you could make somebody drink a glass of truth serum and then they had to tell the truth for like the next hour or something. Boy, I'd like to get a hold of some of that. And I'd like to line y'all up one at a time, make you drink a glass of truth serum. Of course, I guess Patron would probably work about the same way with some folks. That's all it takes for me to get honest. Give y'all some truth serum and then ask you, what do you really think about God? Because some of y'all just pretending. I know, because I did it. Some of y'all are pretending y'all believe in God and you never did. And some of you are pretending you don't and you still do. Some of y'all pray those emergency prayers that go like this. just in case you're real, I know what I've been saying I believed, and I know what I posted, but just in case you're there, my granddaughter has a stubbed toe that needs healing. I just want to throw this out there in case you're still there and you're listening. I know you're all grace and mercy, so you're not offended at me for saying I didn't believe in you. I know, anybody, don't raise your hand, don't be honest, but anybody know anybody that might still hold out that hope and still, you know, because people ask me all the time, they'll write to me and say, do you still pray? You know what? What? You do?
Well, I've got the stone. You got, told Jesus to save
me. See? There you go. There were, so Mike's got a little, thank you for that honesty. Thank you for that honesty.
I just tried it anyway because I thought I was going to die.
See?
Yeah.
Just in case. That's going to be my last prayer.
I had to say that's exactly why. I got to do something. I hadn't done it so long, and it was so strong. I mean, it was terrible.
See? We're holding out. We're holding out this little area of faith that we still... And you confessed it to us. Thank you for that. And see, do you feel better, lighter? Do you feel lighter now?
I'm glad I did, because I'm broke after that.
See? And how many of us would get in that place and revert back to the centerpiece on the table? The centerpiece on the table could be a good title for this. It occurred to me. I never can come up with titles, but maybe that's the centerpiece. What's the centerpiece of your life? And what should it be? Is where I wanted to go with this. I got a few more minutes. Being honest. Gosh, if we could just be honest with each other. And if I could just tell you what all my fears are. And you not judge me for it. If I could just say to you what I really believe. And what I can't figure out. And the parts I do and don't get of this message that's in this circle. And in the next circle. And what I really, if I could somehow be honest with me, I told LaVon and whoever was at the breakfast table this morning, I have years and years and years of my sermons on cassettes and then on CDs. I have worship music. I have prophetic services where I prophesy for 3 hours over individual people and tell them such things as their social security numbers accurately, as their children and grandchildren's names, who I've never met and don't even know. I mean, I was the prophet. I was the traveling prophet for many, many churches who would go from place to place and sing prophetically over people, and I would just suddenly know things. I don't know how I did that. Maybe I really was a prophet. I was just pretending to be a prophet. But maybe, oh my God, I was a prophet. I made way more money to being a prophet. I'm going back to that. Dang it. But, I'm telling you the truth. I used to have CDs of this, of me calling some. I was in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and I called a guy up. And you can hear, you know, everybody going, in the background, and I can say, okay, I'm seeing something. 257-436-092. That's my social security number. I just saw numbers and said them out loud, and it was his social security number. I did it again, and it was a man's address. I did it again, and it was the lady's son's address in Texas, and he was in jail. And I said, and he's on the top bunk of a 2-bunk room. She said, he is. I said, and his middle name is Wesley, same as mine. It is. And the guy underneath him is a Christian, and he's sharing his faith with him. He is. And it was just like walking blindly down this thing, and things were being revealed, and I would say it. And I don't know how that happened. If I could make that happen now, I'd get me a 1-800 number and make me some money right there is what I would do. Because I don't know how. I was in Walmart last week and saw a random woman looking through the grapes, and I walked up to her and I said, you're worried about your daughter, but you need to know that she's okay. You're not in control of her life anymore, but something way bigger than you is. And she wept. I didn't know she had a daughter. I didn't know she had issues with a daughter that I didn't know she had. But see, there's... the centerpiece. So... being honest, but we don't want people to be honest, really. I don't want y'all to be honest. What if we all drank truth serum and I said, now, tell us your greatest sexual fantasy? Would y'all be comfortable sharing that?
Adam Levine, I told you that already.
Adam Levine? He's in mine and Robbie's too. How strange. He's one of our top five. We love Adam. But isn't he sweet? He's kind of short though. You know, he's, but anyway, would you? How honest can you be? I've always ministered in nursing homes because when I was 17 years old, I went to my pastor of the big charismatic church where I went, and I said, I believe I'm called to pastor. And he said, if you pastored a church, who would go to it? Actually, a pretty good question looking back. But a year later, his wife and kids were going to it because he got kicked out of the church and, you know, did his own thing and quit being a Christian. And his wife came to my church, which I was pastoring. But when he told me that, I thought, my God, I'll show him he's a pastor. So I went to the nursing home and said, y'all need a pastor down here? And they happened to need a Sunday afternoon preacher, so I became their pastor. And I'd go room to room, painting ladies' fingernails and inviting them to church. I'd roll them in, lock the wheels down so they couldn't escape, tie them in with a quilt, tie them into the wheelchair, and line them up at the piano. I knew one song. This is the day that the Lord has made. Y'all know the song? This is the day. I'd play that thing. This is the day that the Lord has made. I could play one song. Then they'd start requesting stuff. Do you know Amazing Grace? Mm-hmm. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, saved a wretch like me, lost but now I see. I could play any song they wanted. You know Victory in Jesus? Mm-hmm. Victory in Jesus. I could, any song to that tune, I was there. That's how I learned to play the piano. I'd go home and try to figure out the next song they wanted to sing, and I taught myself how to play because I was tired of playing the same tune over and over again. But in the nursing home ministry, we always went, and then I started going I go in my community now, I still go to the nursing home and play and sing. It's mostly Elvis songs and actual good songs now instead of This Is the Day. But now I sing, this is the gay that the Lord has made. And I'm just to piss him off. But there's this guy named Mr. Fielder, Brother Fielder. He was the Church of God song leader at the big Church of God in Bremen, Georgia, and he was in the nursing home right down from us. So we were in there, and he was losing his mind, bless his heart. He was going through stages of dementia, and his daughters would come. Every program we had, they would come, and they were plain-faced, no makeup, hair in a bun, long dresses, ugly as sin, and needed to be fixed up. But they'd stand back there in the back with their piety and watch all of us tattooed, hippie-looking, fake Christians do our praise and worship music. We had a rock band, and the old people loved it, but, you know, they didn't like it very much. But we were doing a Christmas program one time, and Mr. Fielder had lost enough of his mind to begin being honest. Because religion will make you a liar. You lie to God, you lie to everybody else, you lie to yourself. But he had lost enough of his mind to become an honest person. So he loved the music because he used to be a song leader. So he's up on the front row. And we're just doing Christmas songs, this and that. I don't believe in Santa Claus, but I sing about him sometimes. I still go to the nursing home, sing about God sometimes. And that's worse for me. I'll sing about the Chattanooga Choo Choo. I don't know if there is one. But I'm singing different Christmas songs, and we start singing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. So, you know, and one of the little ladies said, I want all my teeth. And, you know, I said, good one. That's a good one. So that gave me the idea to let people say what you want for Christmas. And I'd say, all I want for Christmas is my... And I'd put the mic in their mouth, and they'd say, little red wagon. And it was so cute because some of them wanted a baby doll, and some of them wanted this and that. So Mr. Fielder, I saw his daughters get back there getting nervous because he'd been kind of going crazy lately. So I said, Mr. Fielder, let's do you. You ready? All I want for Christmas is... And I put the mic in their mouth. He said, some big titties! His daughters turned all red in the face, and they started praying in tongues and went out the door like that because he embarrassed them. But he's just finally got to the place and let go of enough religion he could be honest. And poor old thing, all he wanted was just a pair of big titties. That's all he wanted. And I will never, I can't tell you this story because it's being filmed. I could get in trouble, I guess, for this, but I'll just say he got what he wanted for Christmas. Because I had two or three girls that went to my church. That's the business they were in. So that's all I'm going to say right there. Now, no touch. He just got to, never mind. I'm going to stop right there. See, this is a pastor that made dreams come true. Even when I was still believing a lot of crazy stuff, I could help make your dream come true, especially if you were Mr. Fielder and all you wanted was to see some big titties for Christmas. All right. Honestly, I'm clueless anymore as to how to study or what to share. I don't my whole message now is telling you that I don't know how to share, but in doing that, I'm sharing. Because you're seeing my heart. You're seeing the real me. And there's a message in this somewhere for you. This is not a three-point sermon anymore. I don't have my scripture lined up for you very good. And I told Robbie, Robbie finally said, please go to bed. You'll know what to do. Because I was for hours last night poring over notes and looking at books and looking at Bibles and looking at, you know, I said, I have nothing to say. I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to look so stupid when I go in there. I'm just going to say, I'm sorry, y'all. I have nothing to say anymore. Robbie said, did you forget who you are? I'm pretty sure you'll figure out something to say. I'm thinking that's probably one of your good points, is you can always say something. So I'm acknowledging the profundity and the depth of the message that I'm hearing, and at the same time saying that I just don't know what I can add to it from my perspective that would make it any better. I can try, but I think just by being honest and by being me and talking about my particular view and where I am in my particular walk, which is your walk, because we're all one, I know. But I'm still me. I think I kind of lag behind sometimes, but I've gotten to this place to where I don't care what y'all believe. Yeah. And I don't care what anybody believes. Yeah. I don't care what I used to. I listen to, I was talking about my CDs. Those CDs, I can't throw them away, and I need to. And every time I pick up a box of them and walk towards the dumpster, I'm like, thousands of hours of study and work went into all these messages. And I'll get them like over the dumpster and I'll start shaking and I'll start praying in tongues and I'll take them back in the house. I just can't seem to throw them away because they're my centerpiece. You know, that was part of my, I was so proud of them. We had, man, our CD sales at one point in time, back when I was on that show on The Messenger, my Hell No series, we sold, I guess, thousands of copies of that series, a 4-CD series on why there's no hell. It's called Hell No. It's a great series. It takes through every verse in the Bible that would make you believe there's a place of eternal judgment. It doesn't work for us because we don't care what the Bible says. But for people that still read the Bible and respect it, it is the best series there's ever been preached on why we don't believe in eternal torment. I mean, it's great. I explain every verse in the Hebrew and in the Greek, and I lay it out and why they said what they said about that and why it was interpreted that way and why they, you know, great series filled with humor and filled with stories and like I do, like I preach, like I'm preaching to kids. That's what I do to keep them interested. And it's good. It's a good series. But, and I've got my Hell No series, and I'm trying to throw it in the dumpster, and I just can't. And I don't know why yet, but it's probably my centerpiece that I probably need to throw away. And I've gotten to the place, though, that I'm willing to say that I don't think anybody's wrong. And I don't think anybody's right. I don't think anybody's real. I don't think there is anybody. Was that the right thing to say? That's the right thing. That was the right thing to say, right? So how can anybody, thank you. So how can anybody be right or wrong if there is nobody? I don't care anymore. I used to want to convince them and convert them. Even when, you know, I finally made it to this place to where I know what I believe now is way better than what I used to believe and way different and more right, can I say? So I need to convince the people I love that this is right and they're wrong now, correct? No, I don't. I don't care. And this is not like me because where these things are concerned, I've always, you know, known what I believed and how to prove it and had my scriptures lined up and I could go anywhere at any time and as a lawyer would, I would make my case. Here's why I believe what I believe. I can't do that anymore because I don't even know. That's true. Can't prove my case. I just, all I know is I would kill or die for any one of you in this room. I love you that much. All I know is I would crawl through broken glass for 10 miles to get to Adam if he needed me. All I know, you know, there's things I know these days. I know what's important in the world. I know that pushing a kid on a swing for 2 hours is better than studying the Bible for 2 hours. Yeah. And I'd give anything if I'd done that with my babies growing up instead of giving 16 hours a day to that whore of the church. Because that's all it was a whore. And that's what I did. I was the pastor. I was the great pastor and a shitty father. And it was so funny because I thought I was a great father. I was a model father. Hello, we homeschooled and I had 10 kids. I was the model father. I was the fakest human being on the planet playing a role. And my kids miraculously made it through it and they're all amazing and wonderful and beautiful and they love me, most of them. But it wasn't because I did it right, But isn't it great to look back and be able to be honest and say, okay, I wasn't the best father. I can't live life based on anybody's list of expectations, people's or God's or my own. I threw away my own list. The point is, I guess the point in sharing is to help others process their own revelation and encourage them to walk wherever they are. I don't know what you're seeing, but I want to encourage you that this is what I'm seeing, so this is what I'm going to walk in. I'm not going to try to walk in something I can't see. I'm not going to try to be something I'm not. I'm good at that. Ooh, I'm good. I just can't do that anymore. I'm tired. I'm tired of pretending. If I get a call later and Mike says, I think we'll just use you in the music from now on, bud, instead of speaking, I get that. I understand that. If I get a call that says, I actually don't want you to sing either because your songs are just really shitty, I'm okay with that. I'll be like, okay, that's fine. I get it. Can I still come eat cake and hug people? Because I don't know what I think, and I don't know how to project what I think or how to say what I think. On top of that, I have discovered, though, how to live life in the present and find joy and peace while being light, life, and love. That much I figured out. I don't know how to say it in words, what I believe anymore, but I know how to live. I know how to love. And I know how to find joy. That's my goal every day, is to enjoy myself and to help others enjoy their life and enjoy themselves. I'm going to close with the seven S's of life, and this has helped me. I don't have time for seven S's in 2 minutes. Or I could do my seven S's tomorrow. No, we're doing the other thing tomorrow. I don't want to worry about what I'm preaching all night tonight. Or I could just do the seven S's tomorrow. And still reach y'all's thing. What do you think, Mike? Your call.
Yeah.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
All right, tomorrow. The seven S's. Tomorrow. This is what I've learned. I brought you to this point today to tell you that I don't know shit. Or poop. I don't know poop about anything. But I can say it so well. That was a pretty good hour's worth of talking to somebody who don't know anything, wasn't it?
Really?
Thank you. Robbie will be so glad to know I faked preaching one more time. So I don't, but you know what I feel like today? I feel like I've been honest, and I don't feel like anybody's mad at me about it.
So,
thank y'all. Y'all are a lot of fun. I love you so much. And tomorrow, I have learned, I've put together, I'm going to write a book one day, several of them, for adults. I'm writing kids' books, of course, but for adults. But this is going to be the seven S's of life. And if you figure these seven S's out, your life will be a breeze. So tomorrow I'll share that with you.